The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, also known as Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly, horribly named podcast series, but one where we have a lot of fun because the QA, of course, stands for question and answer, as I like to make this an interactive conversation, a discussion, all the top tech news stories we've been covering, and why I also like to hold my show on a Monday. Gives us a little time over the week, maybe some breaking news happened over the weekend, sort out our feelings and make sure we're keeping up with the top tech stories of the day. And then also just, you know, gives us a little time, sort out our feelings, come together and get our tech week started off right. These are mandatory streams for me just to kind of refuel and get ready for the week ahead. And I'm already seeing a crazy live chat in the house today. Root Knight 5, Crashbox, Q3 Becker, Meister Schwift, Viper, the man about tech. He is dropping fire like crazy in this live stream. We've got Nam, we've got Heike, we've got Walt Samarista, Dave Burns, Aditya Anil, Vazikos, Gary the Fireman. I'm missing people because there are just so many here. This is excellent. Matt Tyler. This is great. I love this squad. This is my stream squad right here. And I am so glad to have you along for the ride because we've got a lot of tech to talk. Tech Loving Mama. I saw her through the live chat too. Yeah, tech for Tech Loving Mama. Joshua14, do you have a Surface Duo in house yet? Any embargo dates or deets? LFA Reviews, good morning. If I had a Surface Duo in house, I would not be able to tell you. But I don't. And we've got, let's see, quick breakdown. I'm going to try and keep housekeeping a little more contained this week. First of all, I hope everyone had a lovely weekend. It was hot and humid, like a gross, smoky, airy humid here in Southern California. We're nowhere near any of the hot spots. There have been a few fires that have been flaring up. I've been trying to check in with some friends who are actually a lot closer to some of the hot spots. But we got some gorgeous sunsets, what with all the smoke up in the air. So for those of you out there, especially in these summer months and with everything going on with work from home and keeping kids at home, school from home. We're probably going to be stressing electrical grids. We're going to be stressing all of our data connections. Everything is about to get torture tested as we hit peak summer. So I hope you're safe. I hope you're keeping cool. And I hope you're able to get your work and life balance sorted out so that, you know, we can make it through this. We're, especially us techies, man, we're going to get leaned on really hard, not only for our jobs, but also for our family and friends to help sort all this stuff out. So Gary the Fireman is saying housekeeping plus or minus 8 minutes. I might be able to pull that off, Gary. We might be able to do that. You know what? I don't want this show to be almost 3 hours long. My voice failed getting into the end of last week. So why don't we go ahead and jump in? And that way we can spend a little bit more time on some of the news. And then we've got a ton of gadget chat. The second half of my podcast is the gadget block. I want to poke at the Note 20 just a little bit. I haven't gone hands-on with one yet. New phone announcements on the horizon from Asus, ZTE, and LG. And then we got to talk about BlackBerry because I don't want to live in a world where there's no such thing as BlackBerry hardware. So let's jump into housekeeping here. Tom Zach, hey man, do you think it's worth getting a Galaxy S20 Exynos or just opt for an iPhone 11? So Zach, we're going to be talking about performance in the second half of the podcast. Save that question, come on back. But I would also maybe throw it out there if anyone, especially if someone's watching on Periscope for Tom, why are your only two choices Samsung or Apple? I'm just, you know, there might be other devices that meet some of that performance that you're looking for and then have other features that you might care about. I'd put that out there because competition is pretty good too. Q3 Becker, it's the I Digress podcast. Woo! Let's see how many times I can sidetrack myself while I'm trying to do something simple like talk about housekeeping. All right, screen share. Boom. A number one, work from home. Don't forget your phone. So I've been trying to raise the stakes on this kind of conversation. A computer is a computer is a computer. I don't care what Apple marketing is trying to tell you about computers. Computers come in all shapes and sizes. Sometimes they're big boxes what live under a desk. Sometimes they're these cute little things that fit in a pocket. A little less so fitting in a pocket if you use computers like I use. Right now, we are looking at constraint on manufacturing. Retailers don't know if they'll be able to keep up with demand for education, the education market. Employers are trying to work their IT departments to get more work from home solutions up and out. This transition period right now, as we get back to school, is going to be kind of tricky. And I feel like people are still inclined to dismiss the compute power in their phones. So this video, work from your phone, you might need to timeshare a laptop in your household, right? I mean, think about when I was a kid, there used to be like an office nook with like a desk and a huge monitor and a keyboard and a tower. And that was the family computer. And families don't often do that anymore. Maybe you have a couple laptops or Chromebooks or tablets. Our home computing strategy is a lot more modular. But if your kids, you know, your kids are going back to school, if your kids have specific needs for computing, you might need to pass a laptop to them, and then you still might need to get some work done. And a couple small accessories, just a little change in how your workflow operates, and a phone can fulfill that really well these days. I mean, again, I like to show off a little folding Bluetooth keyboard. I like to use a mouse with some of my larger screen phones. And then you can do things like plug in an external monitor if you really need more workspace. So I'm trying to keep that option. I'm trying to keep that solution up there, especially since so many people have been overbuying the compute power on their phones. Number two, over the last week, As I was asked, and I wouldn't have been able to confirm or deny if I was under embargo, I do not have a Surface Duo, but Microsoft did ship me a Surface Duo headphone dongle. So this USB-C headphone adapter, and I did a video on it. And the TLDR, or I guess TLDW for this video, is it's not good. It's really not good. Microsoft's strategy here seems overly focused on leveraging mediocre cabled audio quality to encourage upselling someone to buy some Bluetooth buds. So, yeah, that's less than great. I just saw Gary the Fireman dropped a, gifted a tier one sub to Joshua14. Thank you so much, Gary. I'm sorry I missed the little up there. I would have sent you the emote for that. I'm really bad at keeping my Twitch chat where I can get to it quickly. I apologize, but I very, very much appreciate the support and helping people out and gifting all those subs for this stream. But yes, the video goes into more granular analysis. If you don't care to watch that video, I would say pass on Microsoft's $12 headphone adapter. And the biggie, flurry of Pixel 4a videos. The Pixel 4a is one of my sweetheart phones of the year. I use high level power user, powerful, stupid big phones. There are certain features that I want and a certain productivity that I'm looking for. So, I mean, I flash a V60, trying to get my hands back on an Xperia 1 Mark II again. There are needs that I'm fulfilling when I'm looking at $1,000 to $1,400 phones. The Pixel 4a is so critically exciting as it joins the iPhone SE as my family options. You know, when I'm talking to family and friends and they're like, hey, I want to buy a new phone. I'm like, don't spend a lot of money. So a flurry of videos went out, tons of reviews. I always think I always think it's funny, you know, like the phone is finally available to purchase. I've had it for 72 hours. Here's a full review. All right. You know, pump your brakes. I haven't even finished using the Pixel 4a to a degree where I feel I could review it. But Viper's backing me up. Pixel 4a right now is my 2020 smartphone of the year. It's real good. It's a real good phone. So there were some things I could share, though. So adding to my Buy the Benchmarks series, Pixel 4a performance punching above the price. So I always get cranky when someone just shows off a Geekbench score and they're like, see, it's less powerful than this other phone. This is woefully incomplete. I am now looking at mid-rangers and seeing what kind of high-level compute work we can accomplish. And we've got a $350 phone here that can render video ballpark entry-level consumer-grade laptop. If you've been following this podcast, I did a walk-and-talk 4K video vlog, all shot, edited, and rendered on the Pixel 4a. And now I ran it through some of my harder benchmarking render tests. We did a RAR compression test. I showed off some of the gaming prowess. This is a phone that is easily competing. In just terms of compute power, it's easily competing with devices that can cost almost twice as much. So if you were looking at a Velvet or an A71 and you really mostly care just about the most streamlined performance, you don't care about all of the other nice things that go into a phone, extra camera lenses, build quality, IP certifications, wireless charging, blah, 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 blah. This is a phone that easily punches up. You know, Google software optimization on the Pixel 4a help it catch up to the next tier of smartphone chipsets, which is pretty exciting. So, yes, those were the three main videos that I put out. I'm going to have a bunch more stuff. I've shot 6 videos that are in various stages of editing and editorial. So I'm thinking this week might be a little busier. They're shorter videos, but it's more granular. It's more focused content. I'm trying to get away from so many of these like 20-minute exposés. Here's a review. Sit down. This is going to take a half hour. Just because those videos don't really ever perform as well as I'd like. But one last little bit of housekeeping. This took me way too long to set up. So I'm proud of myself for finally getting it done, even though, you know, I'm slow, but I get there. If you go to somegadgetguy.com, there's like a little link right here that says merch, or if you scroll down on the side, there's this little image right here, that says merch. And if you click on that, it My internet connection while streaming is gonna slow me way down, isn't it? This is gonna be funny. It took me to the wrong link. Do I have to fix the link on? Oh no, there we go. I just clicked on the wrong spot. So it'll take you to a place called teespring.com/stores/somegadgetguy, where you'll see some Megapixel mugs, some Bokeh t-shirts. Some endangered species t-shirts featuring the headphone jack, which is the Save the Jack shirt. And I'm finishing up a revised version of the Save the Jack mug. So I'm getting this proofed right now. It's not available yet. This is a hidden listing. But I have a little baby merch store going with Megapixels and Bokeh and headphone jacks. And I'm just embarrassed that it took me so dumb long to get it sorted out. But if you want to see in the wild, in real life, a few of my friends finally got their endangered species shirts. And I'm wearing one right now, which I think my camera is just a little too bright. But you too can show your support for the most consumer-friendly, versatile port on mobile devices that no one ever should have gotten rid of. The headphone jack is still a premium tier feature and deserves to be included on all mobile gadgets. So say we all. And that was my really long, overly rambly housekeeping. Gary the Fireman, much love to JCB for a rad shirt. I had to send Gary one out there. He's just been such a huge supporter for the show and for the podcast. And I got a few proofs that I can kind of ship out. I got to send one out there. So, let me get this out of the way there. Tech Loving Mama, love the shirt. Hey, thanks, Tech Loving Mama. Again, it's wacky, silly nerdcore stuff, but I feel like they're topics and they're nerdy things that we can support. If I can help people pronounce the word bokeh more correctly and not say bokeh, then I feel like I'll have been doing a good cultural exchange. Supporting a beautiful photography term that's Japanese in origin. Like, I feel like I've maybe made the world a slightly nicer place. So, Matt Tyler saying he's going to order a mug. That's nice. Or possibly a hoodie, but it's so darn hot. You know, maybe save the hoodie purchase. For a bit. Now, if you're on the Patreon or if you're in the Discord, I have shared where there is a 10% off coupon code, and I have no issues if anyone on the Patreon or anyone in the Discord shares that coupon code with people here in the live chat publicly. So I'm going to make it a little bit of a scavenger hunt. If you were wanting to support the show, if you want to grab a Megapixel mug or a headphone jack t-shirt or something like that, you wanted to kind of help. If you harass some of the folks on my Patreon or in the Discord, then maybe you can convince them to give you the coupon code and save an additional 10% off. I just feel like that'll be a fun way to make this as contentious as possible. Detail. I kind of lost the discount code, Juan. Dave Burns. But I want to be lazy. Oh, man. I take bribery in the form of shawarma. Oh, God. I don't eat breakfast before I do the show, so I'm not all burpy. I'm already really hungry. So, let's get this out of the way here. All right, we've got a lot of news to get through. And like I said, I want to save a good amount of time for some gadget chat, some BlackBerry chat, and some of these phone leaks and announcements. LF Reviews, it's quesadilla time. Oh, dude, don't do that to me. So for my birthday, my mom hooked me up with an Instant Pot. I had an old beat up pressure cooker that really wasn't sealing like it should have. And I've got some pintos ready to go to make like some Instapot pressure cooker refry style beans. And I am so looking forward to smearing those into a tortilla and making that like a big old messy goopy quesadilla. So man, you're killing me. Yeah, Instant Pot is so useful. I fought it for a while. I was like, oh, I've got a pressure cooker. I like to do this old school. And after our move, I fired up the pressure cooker and it was whistling in a way that it's not supposed to whistle. And if you know how pressure cookers work, that's real scary. So I finally got on board. And yeah, I had to get over myself. It's really cool. I'm a fan. But my cooking shenanigans and escapades notwithstanding, let's dive into some news. The big news story is going to be Apple versus everyone as it pertains to app stores. Again, a continuation on the conversation about Apple versus Epic. Who's right and why is it that Apple is wrong in this showdown? I think we can all agree on that. We've all agreed, right, that Apple is the incorrect party and that they should be smacked down. But I want to start off with a concerning trend in a world right now that is heavily leveraging online, cloud, and social services. We have some significant infrastructure problems that we've all just been kind of ignoring. And when one company goofs, it shines a light on some of the major fixes that we really need to start talking about. So this is a really roundabout way. Oh, dude, across the podcast, I made an amazing barbecue pulled pork in an hour. I need to get like a pork shoulder. God, guys, I'm so hungry. Don't do this to me. No. Maybe one week I'm just going to have to do like an in the kitchen Instant Pot. How many recipes can I make it in a 2-hour broadcast? All right, back to tech news. This is coming from Petapixel. The Lightroom app update wipes users' photos and presets. Adobe says they are not recoverable. So Petapixel's done a really good job of chewing through the Adobe forums, where basically Adobe is just sending people iPads and iPhones. If they updated, oh, here we go. This is the quote from Adobe. We are aware that some customers who updated to Lightroom 5.4.0 on iPhone and iPad may be missing photos and presets that were not synced to the Lightroom cloud. A new version of Lightroom Mobile for iOS and iPadOS has been released that prevents this issue from affecting additional customers. Installing version 5.4.1 will not restore missing photos or presets for customers affected by the problem introduced in 5.4.0. Okay, so that's kind of scary. Untangling this, basically what happened was content on device, but not backed up by Adobe's cloud service, just got nuked. And there is a little pinch of that blame the victim, right? If you're relying on Lightroom, especially mobile Lightroom, and you're not finding some other backup strategy or backup solution, then it's kind of on you. You know, you should be working backups better. But I also feel like the big part of this problem lies with Adobe, right? They released an update to an app which removed content stored locally on the device. Why that would ever happen? Why would that ever happen? Why would an update ever automatically delete data? So Adobe is kind of pointing this towards the commentary. Well, I mean, we offer some cloud backup solutions too. You should just back up to our cloud. But if I had a service on an iPhone or an iPad that wiped out content locally, why would I ever trust that company with cloud storage? And this is one of those things where Apple's reputation in this space for making it just works products, I feel Apple has not done as good of a job as they should for educating their consumer base on some of the recent updates to iOS. I still run into conversations with people who don't understand how file management and file backup works on an iPhone. It's actually improved a fair bit. I still have issues with it not being interoperable between non-AirDrop compatible devices. Like, if I shoot a video on an iPhone and I want to just send it to my NAS, that doesn't really work. It gets recompressed. Apple converts it instead of just sending the native file. So things like that, for me, still totally broken. But if we're talking about someone using Lightroom for light editing, family memories, photos, things like that, we've not brought them into the current reality of iOS or iPadOS, where they have a file manager now. There is a better opportunity for syncing up folders, even as a final fallback. Like, a worst case, I lost everything backup solution is just to install Google Photos and have at least some version of your Lightroom folder synced up to Google. You know, like, it's silly. You'd think, oh, but you'd want to spend more on iCloud. And you probably would. But why not backup in duplicate? You know, like, if you don't have three copies of your most precious content, then you don't really have that content. At any time, something could get nuked, something could get axed, and then it's gone, and it's just proper gone. Mike it happen. Nervously watches from iPad Pro. Crashbox 1236. It's stuff like that scares the crap out of me. I back up everything the best I can, but these companies, I mean, this is not a good look for Adobe. And the way that they're handling this, I think, is doing a disservice to the content creator community, where they're kind of just passing the buck off. It's just an oopsie. We're really sorry, but there's just nothing we can do. And there's no way for us to, I mean, you didn't pay us for anything, so really it's your fault. And that's not enough. Again, if we're looking at app stores and policies and how a company does business through Apple and reaches a set of consumers, we need something better than, oh, noes. And then you just get on with it. And I feel like this is another one of those opportunities. You're using free services, or if you're looking at, you know, how you edit content, I'm almost completely properly out of the Adobe ecosystem. I don't pay for Creative Cloud. I had an old version of Lightroom that I used to use to edit RAW files, but now I'm kind of just using GIMP and plugins. I'm using DaVinci Resolve to edit my videos. This is where the tip of the spear, those of us who are a little bit more bleeding edge, can talk about alternatives to how we would do business with a company like Adobe if they can't rise to the occasion to handle their app users any better than this. Dave Burns, exactly. I don't trust Adobe as far as I can throw them. I like their services, but I use them begrudgingly. And across the podcast with Sam and Matt, luckily for me, my OneDrive has been super solid, but I still have a physical backup. So when it comes to photos, I keep them on my desktop. I keep them on my NAS. I update a very specific folder for Lex content on OneDrive. And then I keep Google Photos just kind of running everything in unlimited high quality. So it's compressed, but I'm at four different locations for my most important photos. And I actually just had a phone call with my mom. They're looking at building like a new home entertainment center, and maybe they're going to get a projector, and they're going to be completely revamping like their whole computer strategy. And I'm going to start talking to her about maybe we could do like an offsite where she sends me a hard drive and I send her a hard drive. And then at like 4 a.m, we run backups on each other's hard drives just to make sure if anything ever were to happen, you know, I could literally mail her a hard drive and she would have all of her content again. So it's heady stuff. I'm looking at adding backup 5 and backup 6 to my strategy. Geet Madden, and above all, DaVinci Resolve is free. That's a very, to get started, you don't get all of the plugins. You get most of the important stuff for cutting, splicing, doing some color correction. And you don't get GPU compute. I'm reworking my Nook So I've got the Ghost Canyon Nook, and right now it's behind our TV, and I'm running it through some gaming testing, and it's such a monster little box. But I finally did some comparisons. You know, like, it uses a mobile chipset, but it's a 9980 HK versus, you know, like, I've got my Razer laptop, that little blue laptop right there. I fired up that Razer, which is now really old. It's a 6700 HQ with a GTX 970M, which is kind of like a 960 graphics card, NVIDIA. And I finally threw on my second license for Resolve and hit render with the GPU compute, and it rendered video almost three times faster than how long it took me to render with Vegas. And at the time, I was really using that laptop for Pocket Now. Vegas had pretty good GPU compute for its time. DaVinci Resolve just demolished it. I mean, like, render speeds off of that terrible NVIDIA mobile GPU, that, like, if I could have had that kind of power back when I was at Pocket Now, it would have completely changed up my mobile strategy on how I was rendering videos. I mean, it's just insane how good DaVinci handles GPU compute. I mean, it's shocking. From Saeed, from Ted, are you going to post the build on that Skull Canyon Nook? I'm trying to avoid buying an iMac. So I do. I actually have the script written. I'm going to revisit the Nook. And again, like my some of my laptop videos, it just took me a little longer than I was expecting to get back to it. I thought I'd killed it trying to install a GTX 1070, but now I'm back. It's running really well right now, and it's a shocking. My build is if you were to put everything into the box that I have, it's about a $2,500 system. So it's not cheap. Ghost Canyon is not, like, you know, ultra budget, small form factor. But considering the price penalty you pay for a smaller computer, you know, like, if you were looking at a mini ITX build, you're kind of in a similar ballpark. I'm pretty impressed. I have some concerns, but I'll be sharing those in the video, and we can get that all set up. Let me get this out of the way here and get that out of the way there. Okay. So to recap all of that, Adobe bad. This is a really quick one, just because I'm frustrated by this, and I feel like some of the commentary gets really cavalier. We have this problem in the tech industry where it's like, well, that doesn't personally affect me, so they should just eat cake. And I'm not really a fan of that kind of commentary. This is coming by way of Android Central, written up by Jerry Hildenbrand. No, Google isn't killing third-party camera apps in Android 11. So, Jerry, but they kind of are a little bit. I feel like this article on Android Central does a better job of breaking down what's going on with Android, Google, and all of the different apps and services that can use the cameras on our phones. We obviously have some privacy concerns, and we've been seeing some ugly play from, like, Instagram. You were going through your Instagram and it would fire up your camera and not notify you that it was accessing your camera. So my problem is, we already write off advanced camera features. So much of the tech commentary talks about cameras as if they're nothing more than artificially intelligent machine learning shutter buttons. And I just don't see the point in buying $500, $600 phones, more expensive phones, $1,000 to $2,000 phones, if the content creation experience is exactly the same as what I can get on an iPhone SE or a Pixel 4a. If you want that baked in auto HDR awesome look, $350. That's what you spend. If that's really the limit of how you're going to use that camera, there is no point in buying more. When you step up to an Xperia 1 Mark II, an LG V60, now that Samsung has replaced some of their more pro mode manual camera controls, Huawei's amazing camera apps. When you step up to those phones, it's not what's the easiest way for me to get the juicy colors. It's I have a very specific look in mind that I'm trying to capture, and these are the tools I need to accomplish that. So for a lot of phones, you can get away with installing a third-party camera app. But what's going to happen in Android 11 is you're not going to be able to use that third-party camera app by default. And that, to me, is the killer frustrating point. If I wanted to rely on another phone, like if I wanted to rely on my OnePlus 8 Pro as more of a content creation platform, I probably wouldn't use the OnePlus camera app. The video mode is nice, but it's really limited. So I'd prefer being able to fire up directly go into Filmic and use Filmic as my mobile video strategy. And moving into Android 11, I won't be able to just auto fire up Filmic. You know, double press the power button and it's just going to take me to the OnePlus camera app. And that's, to me, the death of a power user feature for Android. Us being able to define what camera app we want to use, what web browser fires up by default, different apps and services, like I plug in a USB audio device, I want UAPP to automatically launch so I can listen to music. I mean, those go together, peanut butter jelly time. I mean, that's why I like Android. It's one of the reasons I like Android over iOS. So I understand the sentiment. You can still use third-party camera apps on your phone, silly. But I can't use them the way I want to. And that, to me, feels like a tweak to Android that makes Android a little less appealing. And that's a bummer. Oh, I missed a whole piece of conversation on the LG G7. Blue Malicious, Open Camera is pretty awesome for manual stuff, too. Not only is Open Camera really good for manual stuff, Open Camera, I believe, is still one of the only solutions we have. I think it might be the only solution we have to use USB audio with video at the same time. So you can take like a portable handy recorder, like a Zoom or an Olympus, use the mics or the microphone inputs on that through the USB port, and Open Camera will use that as the audio feed instead of going through a headphone jack or the microphones built into the phone. From Puigi, absolutely, Android has always been about having your phone do what you want it to do. And TK Bay, everyone say, hey, TK, TK Mabe. I love Filmic Pro and Open Camera. Again, being able to define that, to streamline that, that's a big perk. And I'm getting really tired. Again, I made that video last week about Netflix removing support for split screen, you know, so that you can have two apps running at the same time. And then also they killed support for dual screen. So if you play video on one screen and then you go and do something else on the other screen, it pauses the video playback. I'm so tired of boiling down Android power user features. Well, most people don't do things like that. That's not a good answer. The correct answer is we want people to do more with their phones and with their content. And like from Netflix's perspective, like, split screen this so that a part of your phone screen will always be Netflix. We want you doing Netflix on your phone. Now that your phones are so ridiculously tall and skinny, we want Netflix docked in the upper quarter of your screen all the time because we're Netflix. Don't take away my steak because babies can't chew it. That's all I gotta say on that. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. From Dave Burns, 80-20 rule, unfortunately, 20% of the users generate 80% of the hype, and right now we're being forgotten. Oh, this is interesting. This is kind of a fun comment from Blue Malicious. My big brother works at the Birmingham School of Acting. During lockdown, the students needed to record some of their performances for assessment, audio and video. I was able to recommend to him open camera as an option to suggest to the students, and he was tasked with helping them get the most out of their phones for their recordings. See, I mean, like, that is exactly the kind of good tech neighboring that I know so many people are participating with in this live stream. Being able to contribute to that conversation, offer up a solution, and know, like, hey, this is also a rough time, so maybe you don't want to spend $15 on Filmic, but you still need something. There's a free solution. Maybe you should know about it. And Goran Petrovic, we will be talking about the Pixel 5 and Pixel 4a 5G, so don't worry about that. Let me get this out of the way here. Okay, so let me get this out of the way here. This is a real quick one. I'm really glad I never really bought into the Oculus ecosystem. I don't know if anyone here is super duper into VR. Please let me know, especially here in the live chat, if this is going to mess you up at all. But from the official Oculus blog, today we're announcing some important updates to how people log into Oculus devices while still keeping their VR profile. Starting in October 2020, everyone using an Oculus device for the first time will need to log in with a Facebook account. If you're an existing user and already have an Oculus account, you'll have the option to log in with Facebook and merge your Oculus and Facebook accounts. If you're an existing user and choose not to merge your accounts, you can continue using your Oculus account for 2 years. After January 1st, 2023, we will end support for Oculus accounts. If you choose not to merge your accounts at that time, you can continue using your device, but full functionality will require a Facebook account. So even though Lucky Palmer promised that you would never need to do the Facebooks with your Oculus, as soon as they got bought out by Facebook, who is shocked that Facebook took this over and is now making this a mandatory component of the Oculus and Facebook experience? Warhead 324. Oh my God, no. Make it happen. I love my Quest. The Quest looks so good. I just can't bring myself to do business in any meaningful way with Facebook. Josher, good thing I'm a Vive guy. Again, right now I have a miserable, I don't even want to mention the company that makes it. Okay, it was Acer. I mean, it's fine for some quick rounds of Beat Saber, but the mixed reality hardware was kind of cheap. And that's why I got it, is because it was really inexpensive at the time. But we haven't even really set it up in this new place, and we've been here since February. So if I do VR, I'm really side eye on that Index. Steam looks so good, but that's a pretty meaty purchase, and I got to work that one with the wife. Like, what games are we really interested in playing? Because I don't want this to end up just being a Beat Saber Tetris effect box. I'd like to build towards more VR experiences. Across the podcast, I may look into getting an HTC Vive Pro. Mike, it happened. Looks like I'm in the minority with loving my Quest. No, again, the getting to play with the Quest, that is such cool hardware. My problem isn't Oculus is the little sub-brand. It's the knowledge of Facebook overriding and getting involved in between Oculus and Oculus's customers. And that's what I've got a problem with. I don't want, especially considering how cool Oculus tech is for scanning your environment and being untethered, I don't want Facebook cameras in my home at all. That is a philosophical stance. That is a personal IMO. This is not an endorsement or a recommendation for how you choose to operate your mobile strategy, but it's not something that we want here. I do not want that data being operated on, controlled, and accessed by Facebook operatives. So that's just me. That's my own tinfoil hat. But I'd be really interested in a Vive style, in a Quest style solution from Vive. That would make, I would, yes. Dave Burns, man, I need to read 1984 so I can draw parallels with Facebook and Inksock. Yeah, there's some there too. What is the what's the old Russian novel that predated 1984? I can never remember what it's called, but I kind of feel like we're in sort of a Venn diagram overlap of 1984, Brave New World, and whatever that Russian story was. Someone has to know in the live chat. Someone has to know what the name of that book was. But yes, kind of combining them all. Root Knight 5, price aside, I'd say Valve is the top of the food chain right now. Blue Malicious, that would make, I would, yes, that's how you know Juan is excited. Yeah, when I get real lit up, I have the minorest, I mean, not even like, it's not like something I have to overcome. This isn't like a Juan so brave kind of statement, but I have a minor stutter, especially on I and I sounds. You hear it, there's almost always a triplicate, and I just know that. I just know that about myself. When I get really excited, it gets locked. So I try and say four things all at the same time, and my brain crimps, and then nothing comes out but sentence fragments, and it's hilarious. God, it's going to bug me. What is the name of that Russian book? Okay, the biggie for the news block and what we're going to focus on in before we head off into the subreddit plug. This is a follow-up from last week's sort of explosive reveal, Epic and Apple fighting over App Store payments, and Epic playing a much savvier social media game involving people directly in Fortnite, doing a satire of the Apple 1984 commercial, where now Apple is the big brother figure and we've got to take them down. And this is all happening under the auspices of the Suku. So the Suku one is saying George Orwell's Animal Farm. Animal Farm is amazing, and if you like Animal Farm, I would heartily recommend reading Watership Down. But it's not a book about Russians and that kind of Russian play. It's a Russian dystopian novel that was banned from being published in the Soviet era of Russia. And I can't remember the name of the book. But yeah, it's very similar to 1984 in the description of the world, where everyone is sort of on display and these ghettos are sort of like open apartments that are basically just glass. Like everyone can see what everyone else. We thank you, Al Spockley and Gary the Fireman, Dave Burns. Thank you. It's one word and I can never remember that it's we. So, I mean, the majority of our dystopian literature, the Venn diagram is mostly 1984 versus Brave New World. Right now, we're living in a little bit of we also. That sounds wrong when I say it like that. Okay, back to Apple, back to Epic, and why, Apple versus Epic, who's right, and why is it not Apple? So, the big explosion happens. I feel like Epic's position is being overly strawmanned by people who are already predisposed to being fans of Apple. The flip side, you're going to get some of the angriest and crankiest commentary from gamers who are into games like Fortnite trying to talk politics and law against Apple's App Store. So over this last week, when we've been focused on Apple versus Epic, I don't feel a lot of those conversations really kind of drove home what some of the larger concerns are. It's very easy for an Apple fan to say, well, but Epic violated their terms of service. So yeah, bro. I mean, all you have to do is walk it all back and you can get back on the Apple store. So just don't break the rules, man. Which is kind of an authoritarian depiction of Apple in the developer community. We've talked about on this podcast before, there are some issues with a completely walled off garden, Apple killing developer contracts for Apple Arcade, looking at more, like Candy Crush style games, that's going to be the driving motivating factor of Apple gaming. And then we've got to look at the horizon. Onto the horizon, if you're a developer and you want to reach people on Macs, are you going to have similar issues with software that in the past wouldn't have had to go through the Mac store, right? Now that Apple's going to have custom silicon and you want a developer account, is it going to be as restricted and as constrained as iOS and iPadOS? And this is why Apple is currently in the crosshairs for an antitrust investigation. This is, to a degree, monopolistic business practice, which can have a chilling effect on the community at large. So one of the reasons why Apple really ends up not looking great during this during the showdown is because Apple's stance doesn't stop at Fortnite. Fortnite obviously violated Apple's terms of service for including mention of alternative methods of payment and building in a direct option so that people could buy direct through Epic as opposed to buying through their Apple account and Apple getting a 30% cut. But Apple's position here seems overly punitive if it moves beyond Apple pulling Fortnite. So Apple, in continuing to put pressure on Epic, is going to remove Epic's developer licenses. So that means any game using Unreal Engine, which is, an Epic property, Epic won't be able to legally publish updates or bug fixes or refine Unreal Engine for iOS and iPadOS because Apple's just going to pull their developer license. So any game made using those tools is now also going to get caught in the crosshairs. So when Tim Cook is testifying before a House Judiciary Committee and he's asked point blank, does Apple ever punish companies for not playing by these sort of unwritten rules in the App Store? Do they ever seek punitive action on the part of developers when they criticize App Store policies? And Tim Cook says, no, we do not engage in any kind of retribution because that goes against our core values at Apple. And then they're willing to sacrifice Unreal Engine because of Fortnite. That looks bad when you're currently in the middle of an antitrust investigation through the House of Representatives of the government of the United States. So, The Suku one. Damn, I can't buy the novel Wii on Google Play via my Apple device. The irony. So, I mean, actually, I think you can get the book Wii. I believe it's public domain. Someone please correct me if I have that wrong, because I might have a copy that is not good to have if it's not public domain. Matt Tyler, Apple will have no choice but to fold. Epic may be smaller, but they have more backing from gamers and companies they own and also not than they own and also not. I'm not sure what you meant at the end, but I think we all get what your point was. Blue Malicious, but what if they need to issue some kind of patch to the engine for security reasons? They can't. That is the scorched earth policy that Apple is going to initiate. Epic is not playing by our rules. We're going to pull Epic's entire developer account because Apple can't. That is how they write their terms of service. Those are the rules of the iOS App Store. We can make exceptions for Amazon. Like if you buy something, I mean, just think about this as a thought exercise here. You install a game and then the game runs on a company's server, right? So Epic is hosting all of this online gaming. The main interaction between consumers and the App Store is just downloading and installing the game. And then everything else seems to be on Epic. Someone, again, if I have this wrong, please shout caps lock in this live chat right now. So for everything that Epic needs to do to maintain their player base, to do matchmaking for games, to actually host online, real-time, competitive gameplay, that's on their servers. So Apple says, just to have access to people using iOS devices in perpetuity, we get 30% of every monetary exchange. But do you think Apple gets 30% of every purchase that's handled through Amazon? I mean, is there not an Amazon app for iOS? Does Amazon give Apple a 30% cut of everything that takes place in terms of transactions through that? I'd be very curious to see what criteria need to be met for someone to get preferential treatment and lower development costs and commission costs than like a gaming company like Epic. So it moves beyond just Apple wrote these rules, can't break them. That becomes an FTC conversation. Is do these rules actually benefit a free and open, healthy economy? And I think most people would kind of look at that style of behavior and the differences in how companies operate on these platforms as potential issues. So DeLastOneWoke, I agree with Apple as Epic did violate their rules. If we want to change, we need to have laws to enforce those changes. Apple has chosen their stance. We have to wait for this to play out. And again, that's fine. But we have a lot of legal precedent to suggest that this style of consumer interaction has never flown before. I mean, when we even get down to things like, again, we're going to keep bringing up Microsoft with web browsers. Microsoft just including a web browser made so much stink in the EU that it eventually forced Microsoft to include a special web browser launcher when you would install a new web browser, completely walling off iOS and iPadOS customers with no recourse for them to install other pieces of software, and dictating who can and can't do business on these devices will likely run afoul of antitrust investigations. And now we just have to see how much money gets dumped into lawyers and how these fights play out. Because now, one of the other things that came up this week that makes Apple look not as good in this type of showdown is the people at WordPress spoke up because they had kind of an ugly experience with monetization on the Apple App Store. So not only will Apple pull your app if you make mention of some other kind of alternative purchasing strategy. Apple tried to pull the WordPress app because they didn't talk about in-app purchases. So I'm linking in the show notes. All of these stories are going to be on somegadgetguy.com, the show notes for this episode. But what's kind of funny is this is coming by way of MS Power user. So the editorial here is really, you know, like, oh, Microsoft is great and everyone else sucks. But I feel like there's a tone to this that is appropriate for how frustrating it must be if you're one of these developers that just somehow gets on Apple's list and then you have to fight for your right to exist on the Apple App Store. So Apple backs down, still blames WordPress developer for extortion attempt. Hashtag break up Apple. So here's the deal. The WordPress iOS app, they removed any mention of WordPress hosting or subscription rates. There was zero monetization built into the WordPress app for iOS. So you go to WordPress.com, you set yourself up a blog, and there are different payment tiers and structures and things that you can do. None of that was in the iOS app. So technically, that is completely kosher with Apple's terms of service. So what did Apple do? They pulled the app off the App Store because they wanted WordPress to include those extra hosting and purchasing options so that they could get 30% of any monetary transactions that took place through the WordPress app. And WordPress had to fight them to say, we're playing ball with your terms of service. And eventually they got replaced. So this is coming from Matt Mullenweg at PhotoMatt. I am very grateful that the folks at Apple re-reviewed the WordPress iOS app and have let us know we do not need to implement in-app purchases to be able to continue to update the app. Bad news travels faster than goods usually, so please consider sharing that they reversed course. Now, I really want you to look at what he says here, that Apple re-reviewed the app. They didn't change anything on the app. They submitted an app. Apple said, we want 30% of your business. We're going to remove the app from your platform. We're going to remove the app from our platform. And then WordPress made a stink about how that's wrong. And then Apple graciously took a second look at the exact same app and put them back in the App Store. So all of this, like, well, Apple's rules. Apple can't even follow Apple's rules. This is not a meritocracy. Apple is not a government. Apple cannot dictate how commerce happens across the world. This notion of iOS is a perfectly fortified walled garden with some kind of benevolent dictator at the helm of this is not good for business. And increasingly, we're seeing people vocalize some of the frustrations they've had with this platform, but it's also had a chilling effect on this conversation. How few developers have found any good listening for their woes. And if you tick off Apple, you can be pretty sure that you'll be punitively removed from the Apple App Store. So if you criticize Apple business practices, or if you make a stink about a game like Fortnite being on the App Store, well, you know, it's in Apple's rules. They can just murk your developer account. So just, you know, just don't ever break the rules and don't ever speak out and just don't ever complain and never try to reform. Certainly don't talk to the government during an antitrust investigation and you'll be fine. Just always be a good Apple follower and citizen. Good Apple person. Be good Apple because they don't bully. Tim Cook said under oath that they never seek retribution. They never try to extort. They never would ever, ever, ever bully. a developer who spoke out against their App Store practices, except that they totally have. Except that, like, So, I mean, again, the hashtag, you know, break up Apple, I don't know. But what we do need is some type of more granular examination of Apple business practices as it pertains to FTC guidelines. Because exactly what happened here with WordPress, to me, would reek of an FTC investigation. Again, the FTC really doesn't have teeth unless someone violates the stated terms of service. If the stated developer terms of service are you cannot mention alternative purchasing in your app, and WordPress never included that kind of language or that type of option in their app, and Apple still pulled their app, then that should be an actionable position for a regulatory agency to take a look at. It's a bad look. This has not been a good 2-week period for Apple's image as, again, this benevolent overlord of iOS and iPadOS. From Pakostin, anyone who submitted to the Apple App Store knows the review process is roulette. Blue Malicious. So basically, you need to be big enough and also pleasant enough to cause a polite fuss on social media and get people to listen before they will check if they made a mistake. Kind of reminds me of YouTube. Yeah, because Google not doing much better here. It takes like years of abusing their terms of service. If you're a larger channel, you can abuse their terms of service for years before they'll think about considering the possibility of examining the potential of giving you a warning and a slap on the wrist. But yeah, it's frustrating. So that WordPress story hit me a lot harder than I was expecting it to, because this entire conflict was never on my radar. I use the WordPress app a lot on Android, you know, for managing some gadgetguy.com, fixing up articles. Like I don't compose stuff, but I'll be scanning through and, or someone will say, hey, like you've got a really dumb typo here. So much faster. Pull up my phone, tap, 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 republish, and I'm good to go. For me using WordPress as a platform, none of this was on my radar. Had no idea. And I'd still had the WordPress app on my iPhone, but I hadn't bothered to look if it had been getting updates or if it had been removed from the Apple App Store. It's WordPress. Who would pull the WordPress app? What reason would you have to fight WordPress? And yet here we found exactly the criteria where Apple wanted to force them to re-include options for in-app purchases to get a cut of business that they don't deserve. So, I don't know. I don't know what all of this looks like. I mean, really, when we start getting the courts involved, this is going to get so complicated for juries and for judges that really, I don't think this is going to be the lawsuit. I don't think the lawsuit is going to be a clear determining factor in changing online commerce, but it's going to contribute to a conversation that then the rest of the government is getting involved in. And right now our politicians are getting real interested in the internet and how they can score some easy political points with their various demographics and constituents. And one way is to go after big tech. So however this plays out, Apple versus Epic is going to be one very small component in a much larger conversation on how big data leverages information and services. And we'll also have to look at infrastructure and the whole kit and caboodle, see how we can make it all work together, because it's going to get messy. I think it's going to get real messy. So why don't we say, I had one other story. I'm going to go ahead and bounce it. Let's go ahead and move over to subreddit plug. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception, but my subreddit is a community to try and it's to try and help people get more exposure. The sort of tagline is, please share content that you think deserves more attention. This is not a me subreddit. though I'm happy to announce I have once again taken the top spot on my own subreddit. Spoiler. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a small but growing community of people sharing content creators, editorialists, anything tech related, and not focusing on the major publications and the largest YouTube channels, because there is a vibrant community, an exciting community, much broader discussions, longer term, real person style reviews, and it's growing. And that's what makes me so excited and so happy to be a part of creating something like this. Is if you go check out your YouTube channel, you're going to get a very manipulated feed of the most popular content. And that's not really a true reflection of what people are talking about. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and a number one, I win. The number one story of the last week, Surface Duo headphone dongle, hard pass. So Matt Tyler and Dave Burns, you have not dissuaded people from upvoting my content to the top tier of my subreddit. Oh, I got to drink some water now. That actually kind of messed my throat up a bit. Matt Tyler, we went 1 week when Juan wasn't on top. Damn it, guys. Okay, sorry. Let me go back in the screen share. Number two. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm so stoked to see Tana. Tana's so lit, talking up Pixel 4a True Review, the ultimate budget beast. I like Tana's style. He's got a really fresh flavor, and he swears a lot more in his videos than I do. He's a really good dude. His streams are a lot of fun. So really excited to see him take second spot, third spot. Again, it was a Pixel 4a kind of week. My buy the benchmarks hit the number three. So I took the number one and the number three spots. Super proud of me. Coming in at number four, Tech Odyssey. A buddy of mine recently did one of his live streams looking at the LG Velvet. Number five, Samsung Galaxy Note 20 Ultra Real World Camera Test from Josh Vergara. We also have a Note 20 Ultra versus iPhone 11 Pro camera comparison from Nothing But Tech, MBT. And then TK Mabe looking at the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra versus the... Oh, he's got both. Okay, I see what he did there. A comparison between the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra and the Note 20 5G. Why people dislike the regular Note 20 S Pen. Also looking at the regular Note 20, we've got Painfully Honest Tech. We've got Jason looking at a plastic back for a $1,000 phone. And rounding out this list, some more Note 20 Ultra top five complaints from Josh Vergara. And the speed test G between the Note 20 Ultra running in a Snapdragon 865 versus the Note 20 Ultra running the Exynos 990, which we're going to talk about in the gadget block. So, great list, just a great list of content, but all kinds of stuff as you start scanning through what was popular over the last week, talking up Nord, OnePlus Bullet Z versus Realme Buds Q, iPad 2020 first impressions from an Android user, Fandroid doing, this is what I love. I love stuff like this. Nick Gray at Fandroid did a Note 20 Ultra versus Pixel 4a camera comparison. I love the way he puts those together. And then we got some GPU benchmarks from my buddies at Newegg, put together a video on maxing out 1080p and 1440p graphics settings, looking at some Gigabyte cards. Yeah, some really good times. Matt Tyler, no one upvote any of Juan's videos this week and downvote instead. Keep him down. No. See, glowing rectangles, the philosophy, people are feeling glowing rectangles. And we're not about putting content creators down. That's not what we do. But we are about building other people up. When you see, a content creator you've never seen before, I guarantee you, you're going to be finding some great content that you haven't caught before. It's a small subreddit. We comfortably have 1,100 subscribers right now, but it's growing every week and we're picking up more momentum. More sharing, more upvoting, more comments. That participation is so critical for helping a content creator find more audience. You know, what I want Glowing Rectangles to be is a good feeder subreddit. So if something gets popular there and it gets shared to a larger subreddit, that could blow up someone's channel. Like, that could be huge. So we've gotta all stick together on this, even when I win. Saeed saying, no, you're not. It's this guy. So Saeed, I think what you're looking at is top for the day. I was top for the week. So if you look at top this week, I came in with the Surface Duo headphone video. So I win. I'm the winner. I am the champion, my friends. Boing Bite, can that graphics card run Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020? I don't know that anyone can. Dave Burns, my Python is shabby, but spite is a beautiful motivator. Well, I am the moderator at Glowing Rectangle. So if y'all start like downvoting me just to try and win, instead of upvoting everyone else, I'll just have to start pulling the same move that like the mods on other popular subreddits do. And I'll just have to ban you all. Oh no, self-promotion. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people. Producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadoubt.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadoubt.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
Ooh, Fat Produce, this is a great idea. We should have a Glowing Rectangles audience video creation challenge. I would be down for that. I'd totally be down for that. Other ways that we can kind of encourage some other conversation. I have a viewer review on a Motorola. We're going to read this off. I meant to do it last week. So yeah, let's see if we can, Matt Tyler Wan turned into the evil dictator of the Reddit. Ah. let's talk about that on the Discord. Maybe some way that we can do sort of a, because I never did. I really wanted to do some kind of celebratory 1,000 followers video stream, and then life just kept getting in the way. But we could revisit that. I think that would be really fun. Let's get into the gadget block. We've got a lot of gadget news to cover. Galaxy Note 20 out into the ecosystem. All the popular channels got their review unit of the Ultra. But we're also seeing a few more people now starting to get their regular Note 20s shipped out. Some interesting commentary back and forth, but it does seem that this has been kind of a challenging year for Samsung premium devices. Prices have climbed even higher. 5G has added to component costs. Qualcomm has added to component costs. And then Samsung still, this year, has been operating with a wider discrepancy in performance between different regions. And by that, I mean in the United States and I believe in South Korea. In Samsung's home country, their products come with Snapdragon Qualcomm processors. And the rest of the world gets Exynos, a Samsung-made processor. And over the last 2 years, Qualcomm has managed to improve upon the Exynos pretty significantly. And so I think one of the best depictions of this, especially because I'm gonna spend some time with a Note 20 at some point, but the next phone on my review list is gonna be the Duo. I really, 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 really want to focus and get spend some time with the Duo. I just think it's a more interesting phone than the Note, and then from there I'll revisit the Note 20. And I guess I haven't been feeling Samsung's strategy at $1,300 and beyond. Especially for how much time I've spent with an LG V60 at $799 full MSRP, but regularly found for like $500 at Costco.
when I look at a Note 20 Ultra at $1,300 and an LG V60 full retail at $800, that conversation is tricky in my brain. Apparently the Chinese version is going to get the 865 too. Okay. So, yeah, I guess. Simon says, Hypno, the Exynos feels bad in the hand. I mean, you know, like the most important thing I can talk about when I pick up a phone is like, you know, like, does it feel like it was made for an evolved primate? You know, I have an opposable thumb. What does that mean for holding my phone? I guess it feels pretty nice in the hand. It's been a long time since I picked up a phone that didn't feel nice in the hand. So I want to send a special shout out. I'm not going to play it here, and I'm not going to spoil the actual results, because actually, if I play this video, I'll probably get dinged on YouTube for copyright. But Speed Test G, one of the top 10 videos on glowing rectangles this week, he pits the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra with the Snapdragon 865 against the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra with an Exynos 990. And who wants to take bets on which phone won? Which one? Do you think the refined, slightly more powerful Snapdragon won, or do you think the Exynos 990 won? As spoiler, the Exynos 990 loses, and loses by a decently significant margin. Again, SpeedTestG is Gary's proprietary testing platform, where he runs a bunch of local synthetic benchmarks, and he times how long it takes to complete all of them, and then he shares those times, and he breaks down some of the differences between CPU performance and graphics performance. So just like the number crunching and the graphics crunching. So Gary explains, Gary's a good dude. I really enjoy his main channel. And then his Speed Test G is also called like a horse race. Oh, they're rounding the curve and he's going to come up and, oh, look, we're into the compression test. And oh, look at all these threads. And now he's going to come into the graphics test. And it's fun. It's cute. It's a really cute hook. And each run only takes like 2 minutes. So it's good nerdcore stuff. And especially for this one, like pitting the two notes against each other, 150,000 views. Totally deserving. Gary's a good guy. So when we look at the differences in performance, and again, for how much custom code Samsung needs to run on top of their phones, I think people often lose sight of, you know, Galaxy devices are super powerful, but running all of that extra stuff on top of Android, on top of a Linux kernel, they don't always supersede other competing devices. Like a phone that's got similar components but runs less custom software on top or has a more stock implementation of Android can oftentimes outperform it. My own experiences, especially from Samsung last year and looking at some of how they track this year, you know, Pixel 4 XL for heavy video and image processing is still crushing current Snapdragon phones this year. So pick a Pixel from last year, because of Google's hardware software optimization and their custom image, their custom ISP, absolutely destroys phones this year for like 4K video rendering. So I'd recommend checking it out. Gary does the run, the Exynos loses, and loses by enough of a margin where, like, you could maybe pick up a phone from last year and it would be ballpark competitive with the most expensive Galaxy this year. It's an interesting position that Samsung's in, because they're the number one Android manufacturer, but their grasp on the premium market is pretty tenuous. Every company making super premium expensive phones has been in a rough position this year. For Apple and for Samsung, their biggest gains for consumers came from phones like the A51 and the iPhone SE. So those phones, the ultra cheap phones, are the ones that are saving their financials right now, not the $1,300 solutions. From Pat Gostin, I definitely want to see this too. Meanwhile, I want to see more of MediaTek Dimensity 800 versus SD 765. I reached out again to a PR company that does work with MediaTek and just said like, hey, I mean, the only MediaTek I've gotten to use this year was in the Stylo 6, that little like Helio P35, which is crazy underpowered. It's actually surprisingly good for like watching video, but you know, we're talking a Snapdragon 400 competitor, and I really want to play with something a bit beefier. Like the Dimensity 1000 looks like it should be able to give an 855 a run for its money. It looks like a solid chip. I don't know, man. It's just frustrating watching some of this, like some of these market politics play out. ER1980, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Samsung has to sell the Snapdragon variant in the US market due to licensing agreements with Qualcomm. I might be wrong. Again, that is the case, but just to say there's a licensing agreement between these two companies doesn't explain what that licensing agreement is. Qualcomm has used Samsung for chip fabrication. There's probably modem components, radio components, antenna licensing, 5G certifications and licensing. All of this stuff gets wrapped up and gets entangled in a really aggressive way. So it's tough to say, you know, like, well, what is it? Why do they still choose to do the split strategy? Why do they see the benefit of having control over this part of the market? Companies have been burned by Qualcomm in the past. The Snapdragon 810 was kind of the death knell for HTC and also kind of killed off the Nexus in a way. So it makes sense for a company like Samsung to say like, hey, we want to have some control over our own destiny, and that gives us leverage to negotiate a different deal with Qualcomm, because if they bump us out, we could always just, you know, start using our own processors instead. And why we'll also see Google probably make some kind of play for custom silicon in the near future. Let's see. Vazico say, the only thing I want from Speedtest G is more Speedtest G. I want to know what happens after 40 runs. So he has done like longer term. He doesn't do that for every phone, but there have been what he did. He did a half hour of runs on Speedtest G for, I want to say it was the Galaxy S10 Plus. Someone correct me. I know I probably have the wrong phone there. And he also did it with the iPhone. And again, it was very surprising for phones with no active cooling. We were seeing drops of between 10 and 15% in performance, but like, that's really good to only lose that much when you're running the phone at its maximum for so long. All right, moving right along. Let's check out this leak from Asus. Who's hyped for an Asus, a new Zen phone coming way soon? This is Android Headlines written up by Chris Dijan Lusik. I've mispronounced your name. The Asus Zenfone 7 partial design has finally been revealed, and it looks like the Zenfone. They're moving to a three camera module, and I'm bearing the lead here. The Zenfone was notable last year because there was no notch and there was no hole punch. There was no top forehead bezel of any significant thickness because the rear camera would flip around if you wanted to use it as your selfie camera. It felt like a pretty solid mechanism. I haven't seen any data on how well those phones have aged. I got to play with one at Computex, but I've not gone hands-on for any length of time. But looking at this, we're going to get, I believe this is, they're rumoring a 1080p LCD at a higher refresh rate, but the main draw is going to be this triple rear camera array that flips up so that you can use your main cameras, your good cameras, as your selfie cameras. And to me, this is one of those amazing solutions for not disrupting our screen. I absolutely hate it when we cut into a display for a mediocre webcam. Again, if Android were smart enough to properly block off the notch or hole punch area so that video would never extend, I wouldn't be as bothered by a hole punch or a notch. It's every time I full screen a game or full screen a video, and then there's something cut out of the video for a webcam I almost never use, drives me crazy. And then also, if you want to take good photos of yourself, why do you use the worst camera on your phone? You should use the best camera And that's what Asus is doing here with a motorized flip-out camera module so that you can use the good camera. They're saying it's going to have the 64 megapixel main sensor, the same sensor that I believe we've been seeing in the LG V60. And it's going to be backed up by 12 and 8 megapixel cameras on the back. I believe the 12 is the zoom and the 8 is the ultra wide. But I might have that reversed. Again, someone please correct me there if I'm wrong too. But yeah, so it's interesting. LCD, again, whether or not that's going to cut costs, but it should be a higher refresh LCD. That's what the rumor is. We should be looking at like a 90 hertz 1080p LCD. So yeah, could be interesting. But again, the big draw, if you care about taking better photos of yourself and you don't want a big dumb hole in your screen, then this might be the solution for you. And oh, Matt Tyler, the Nubia Z20 needs a sequel. Yeah, or you could go dual screen. The thing I love about that Nubia is instead of just a glass back, there's a mini screen on the back that you can use as a composition window. Like, that works super well, and you're using the main cameras as your selfie cameras. It's really handy. Again, any other solution that gets us using the good cameras is good. I did some low light nighttime photography shoots with my Pixel, and I reshot some stuff with my Velvet. I'm going to be hopefully getting a Velvet camera review out next week. But I just keep coming back to every single time I go to take a picture, like with my selfie camera, it's garbage. And then I turn my phone around and I shoot blind from my rear camera and it looks great. So I have increasingly little patience for this selfie strategy of cutting into our screen. So Hadid 90 is saying the Zenfone has no OIS. I'll be curious to see how that plays out. The Velvet, the main camera sensor on the Velvet, doesn't have OIS, but it still has the software algorithmic image gyro stabilization. And in good light, it is really difficult to detect significant differences. I shot a video running after my daughter on a push bike, and I don't know that I care. Like, OIS is probably still a little handy for helping on things like still photography and getting a longer shutter speed, but our computational abilities to manipulate images and video are getting surprisingly good. But let's move on. Oh, and I pronounced your name correctly. Excellent. I'm glad. All right. Two other real quick. Let's just chew. I always say, let's just do this real fast. Let's do this real fast. If you're looking for some competition for an Asus Zenfone 7, you might be able to tag a ZTE, maybe somewhere in there where the Axon 20 5G is going to be coming out soon. And wouldn't you know it, the big selling point here is also a completely uninterrupted screen. So no hole punch, no notch. It's just all screen on that front face because their solution is an under-the-display selfie camera. So instead of like a motorized pop-up selfie camera or a flip-around motor, ZTE thinks that they can finally pull off the tech for making a camera completely hidden behind the pixels of a display. So that seems to be the trend. We had always hoped that the awful iPhone unibrow was only going to be a temporary pit stop on our way to devices with more screen, because you don't really get more screen when you cut into the display and you make boundaries and borders work weird. Instead, what you've got are fragile bezels that need to be used from time to time. So we'll have to see if this is the way to go. I still hold to the notion that your selfie camera on the front is garbage, And if you really care about trying to shoot something that you'll want to look at that photo sometime again in the future, you should use the rear, the nice camera on your phone. But what we need to see is this is the first generation of an under display selfie camera. Is this going to impact the image quality, having live pixels in the way of the selfie camera? So I'll be curious to see. I hope ZTE can do something cool. Axon 7 is still one of my all-time favorite phones. I'd love to see ZTE kind of crawl back into some more competitive market space. I see TK Bay is saying under display is the way to go. I'm curious. I want to see, you know, like all of the tech that we're building into fingerprint scanning and selfie cameras and all of the stuff that we keep trying to put under the display. I'll be anxious. I don't know that this is going to make our phones better. Right? Like, I still don't think any in-display fingerprint sensor has achieved both the security and the ease of use of a good hardware-dedicated fingerprint sensor, especially a rear fingerprint sensor. So, again, same thing. I wonder, is this really going to be better for the selfie camera, or is it just going to look cooler for having an uninterrupted display? Because an interesting move from our pals at LG is that they're doing their first hole punch, and it's coming on a mid-ranger. So, you know, we just started getting more traction, Velvet making it out to more consumers. I think that the AT&T exclusivity is going to be ending soon. But in some markets, they're also going to be getting a phone called the Q92. Which looks kind of like a Velvet and a Stylo had a baby. So instead of the harder curved flexible OLED, they're instead going to be going with an LCD, again, a full HD LCD. And it looks like they're basically taking a similar screen assembly to the Stylo, but instead of having a widow's peak notch like the Stylo has, they're doing an LCD with a hole punch. So, you know, we can always count on LG as being one of the last of a trend. You know, when phones got rid of headphone jacks, IR blasters, and removable batteries, and metal backs, LG was the last company to hold on to those things. The V20. Who knew the V20 was going to be such an end of an era? But while some companies are trying to push aggressively into no notch, no hole punch front facing displays, it looks like LG is finally catching up to the hole punch. So that's pretty great. from Matt Tyler, woo, another LG phone the UK can wave at from a distance. Again, it's just really heady stuff. It looks like this phone is sort of a Velvet, but slightly cheaper. Again, LG's distribution strategy is just really rough right now, but it would be really cool if this is the phone that could start making it out into some other markets that were maybe on the cusp of building out 5G, you know, 765, lower cost, you know, undercutting an A71. But yeah, it's tough, you know, keeping traction on that kind of distribution. Oh, yeah, actually, that's a good point. Q3 Becker, hoping for a 1,000 nit display. If you remember, the G7 was a beast in bright conditions because that LCD got super bright. So that could be kind of cool. Again, I prefer this hyped color saturation, inky black OLED, but LCDs still got some life left in them. They're still acceptable phone displays given a certain criteria of pros and cons. All right. Let me get this out of the way here. So, who wants to talk about the Pixel? I got some questions. Let me see if I can scroll up and find it in the chat. From Pakostin, what do you think? Did Google intentionally release the 4G version of the 4A to saturate the search results with great battery life before the 5G version makes that just good battery life? No, I don't think Google's strategy played. Again, with very, very limited insight into Google marketing and being pals with some of the people that run that like hashtag Team Pixel campaign, which is why I have a Pixel 4a hashtag gift from Google. Nothing about this year speaks to me of Google being able to maximize on a strategy that could execute what you're suggesting, that Google is playing the game to get preferential coverage on one phone that will then bleed over into another phone, and it's going to confuse consumers because I thought the Pixel had good battery life, but now I got this one and it's just okay. Like, nothing about this year speaks to me that any company, even Google, could operate with that kind of targeted blurring of the lines. Everything about the Pixel strategy this year just feels like react and recover, react and recover. The situation of social distancing and shelter in place, disrupting manufacturing lines, completely interrupting what their hardware strategy was going to be, and they're reacting to that, and they're trying to recover. And the way that they launched the Pixel 4a, I felt, was probably the most responsible way they could. They launched the Pixel 4a and immediately disclosed that a 5G version was going to come and that the Pixel 5 was still on the horizon too. And if we wanted to cast aspersions, if we wanted to claim that Google was trying to do something nefarious, they totally would have been within their rights, I guess, to release the 4A and then just kind of whistle and twiddle their thumbs and not say other phones are coming too. You know, they could have slow played that or played it quietly or, oh, well, we still have plans for 5G. You wait, you watch. But instead, they just came right out and said, hey, here's the Pixel 4a. This is what we can get out the door right now. But there will be some other options that you can play with coming out soon. So we got a better look. Excuse me. We got a better look at the Pixel 5 and the Pixel 4a 5G. This is coming by way of Android Authority. Excuse me. The first real image of the Pixel 5 and the Pixel 4a 5G. And what's going to be interesting is it looks like the Pixel brand is going to be split up over three sizes with different hardware components making up different tiers of pricing. So according to this, the Pixel 4a 5G is this larger phone in white, which also seems to have multiple camera sensors, kind of like the Pixel 4 last year. Then the Pixel 5 is the smaller phone, but will have some more premium hardware offerings over the Pixel 4a phones. The smaller phone of these two is going to have the larger battery, but it's also going to have the higher refresh rate display, which will probably eat into that slight battery size advantage. So it's interesting looking back and forth. If you want a headphone jack, the Pixel 4s are going to be your jam. But both the Pixel 5 and the 4As have rear-mounted fingerprint sensors. So if everything we see from these leaks comes to pass, one thing I do appreciate is Pixel 5 will be a smaller phone. Excuse me, hold on one second. Let me drink some more water here. Okay. So, Pixel 5 is the smaller phone. They're at least holding to that convention where if it's just a number or like a number and an A, that's the smaller size. We do not seem to have any disclosure on a Pixel 5 XL. So, what we're trying to piece together from Pixel's going on right now, we're probably going to see a minor spec bump. So the processor in the Pixel 4, the Pixel 4a is the 7730, and we're going to see them step up to the 765. We're seeing some rumors that the 765 is going to support 4K 60 video. We don't know if that is going to be in the Pixel camera app, but that the phone should support it. So it could be very much like the Pixel 4. So I've got a Pixel 4 XL, and you can shoot 4K video at 60 frames per second using a third-party app. You can fire up Filmic. Filmic recognizes it. 4K 60, you're good to go. I'll be curious to see, because I don't think any 765 series Snapdragon has supported 4K 60 yet. So what this could be, fingers crossed, is that by reducing component costs on the processor and not including Soli, so there's not going to be any of that front-facing radar gesture, it seems, unless they've been able to make it under display, as everything's going under the display these days. But again, we haven't seen any traction on this. I think we can be fairly confident this won't have air gestures or radar support. But if they have the same image processing hardware in the Pixel 5 that they had in the Pixel 4, we could be looking at a Snapdragon 765, which can compete with Snapdragon 865s for photo and video processing. That could be really exciting. And then hopefully also meaning we're getting a really premium experience at a lower price. But yeah, I think we're pretty confident, at least from what people have been saying in terms of rumors. I think we're pretty confident that the Pixel 5 is not going to have a headphone jack, because headphone jacks are for poor people. Just don't be poor, right? I mean, sure, you might have like some really nice expensive cans that connect over a cable, but just go buy Bluetooth, right? I shouldn't have made that noise. That also kind of hurt my throat. Gary the Fireman, can Google ever get their ish together? I'm not too spiky with Google this year. Looking at every single major manufacturer, Sony had issues on distribution for the Xperia. LG had issues with distribution and different markets for 5G with the V60. They're clearing up some of that, but the Velvet also is kind of piecemealing older parts like the Snapdragon 845 just to get their hands on components so they can ship out phones. Google's hardware strategy is always going to be a smaller component of the overall Google and Android strategy. And I got to say, like, you pick up and you use a Pixel 4a and it's such a stonking good phone. Especially for a market here in the United States where we don't have a lot of sub $400 competition that nice. I mean, yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer that they couldn't ride this wave a little earlier. Like the Pixel 3a came out earlier in the year. But I got to say, I mean, like, just getting anything out the door these days is kind of remarkable. You know, the only company not facing similar, you know, time delay issue. Even Apple has postponed like some of their core hardware distribution strategy, and they're Apple. And the only company that hasn't is Samsung, and they're slow playing Fold 2. Z Flip started with last year's components and is getting a refresh for this year on 5G. And Samsung is the world's largest global distribution company that also manufactures a bunch of the components that go into their phones. Google doesn't make screens. Google doesn't make RAM. Google doesn't make flash storage. You know, like, they've got to piecemeal that out. Samsung has the inside scoop on what Samsung chip fabrication, memory component manufacturing, flash storage manufacturing, and display manufacturing can accomplish. So I'm this year, maybe less so in any other year if Google had been operating like this. This year, I'm fine cutting everyone a little slack. Just, you know, it's fine. Simon says, Hypno, the peasant port. Saeed, I am poor because I have good headphones. So it all works out. Again, I finally played with some planar magnetics a couple weeks back. Headphones, they're expensive, especially nice ones. Matt Tyler, headphone jack is for poor people, but the headphones you plug into the jack are for rich people. That's hilarious. All right, let's wrap up. Yeah, we're getting to the end of this week's podcast. Pixel 4a 5G, Pixel 5. It's an odd year. But I think Google's got the right strategy, just like I thought LG had the right strategy. If Google were to come out with $1,000 Pixel, it would be savaged. I can keep going back and showing people how good the Pixel 4 XL is at a variety of some really exciting, heavy lifting, compute powerful situations. But the common knowledge is it wasn't good enough and it was too expensive. And you're like, yeah, but I can show you where this Pixel 4 XL for a lot less than what you would have paid for a comparably spec'd iPhone 11 Pro Max with more than 64 gigabytes of storage was able to outperform Apple's solution and with some interesting perks that were unique to the phone. But that pie was baked. Not good enough. It wasn't good enough. It wasn't worth its for the monies enough. If only they'd made it worth its for the monies, we would have said it was worth its for the monies, but they didn't make it. They didn't push the worth its for the monies button. So the Pixel 4, not worth its. The game gets exhausting because we keep playing this hype machine game. But what phones get to be worth it? I talk to my family and friends, and man, I can put some cheap phones in their hands and they get excited. And then I can show them, you know, like I was making fun of my cousin. You know, like he had to stream something on Twitch because he was in this contest and he couldn't do anything else on his iPhone. And you're like, well, why can't you just do something else on your iPhone while you're also streaming that Twitch stream? He's like, because I can't. So then I pull out my V60 and you're like, what? You just don't use like a second display or split screen it or do two things at the same time? And you're like, my cousin and his mom had just like never seen anything like that before. We got a ways to go. And consumers, they're not playing this gadget hype game. So a Pixel comes out and let's say a Pixel 5 lands at like, I don't know, $699. It's got the Google brand. It's going to be called the Google iPhone. When consumers go in to shop it at a carrier store, they're going to see it's a Google label on a Google software product. And it'll probably outperform phones like the Velvet and phones like the A71 in a variety of applications. So the value of that software hardware optimization, maybe some hardware components like a better ISP, like that could be our jam. I don't know. But regardless, if they had come out, you know, $899 for 64 gig and $999 for 128, too expensive. Probably would have been correct this year. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like.
while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
And Goran Petrovic and the Snapdragon 875 will be even more expensive next year.
Gary the Fireman, Flavor Flav, said it best, don't believe the hype.
Oh, and yeah, Goran Petrovic replying to Atnam, Samsung, and unless Samsung and AMD deliver a surprising blow with the new Exynos next year, I'm really hopeful that Samsung's Exynos strategy and AMD's graphics strategy will play that game right. But we do need to wrap up this podcast. I started us down this path, and then I got distracted, so, you know, I digress. How are we all feeling about a return to hardware keyboards maybe next year? My beloved BlackBerry Key 2, my red edition, which if you were to try and buy one of these online is like a $3,000 phone. I'm totally kidding. It's only like $1,200 when I look it up. I love BlackBerries. Again, when we're talking about communication and productivity, still nothing has beaten that kind of communication bang for buck, hardware strategy, customization strategy, shortcuts, auto launching. You know, still, I mean, like the muscle memory is insane. Like I swipe over the thumbprint sensor and I scroll my thumb up to B and I hold down the letter B and I'm talking to my wife and I never have to look at the screen. It is a communicator device and I adore it. So we got some news last week that BlackBerries are going to be coming back in 2021. How are we feeling about this? What are we, Aditya Anil, BlackBerry, the king rises. Dave Burns, too, I want the option for a hardware keyboard, Crashbox 1236, CrackBerry. Aditya Anil, hashtag make physical keyboards on phones great again. Woof. Dave Burns, that's not worth it enough. Simon says, Hypno, I'm feeling meh about it. I never had one. Alce Bockley, physical keyboards will be super niche in 2021. Super niche in 2021. What makes you think they weren't super niche in 2018? This was a super niche phone already. just because people got used to screens. This is another thing that kind of ticks me off. Oh, but look at all. You could have so much more screen. If you constantly have your keyboard up, you do not have more screen. You have less screen than when you have a dedicated thumb board at the bottom of your phone. And hardware tactile interactions are better. They're just better. Like, there is no software keyboard for a desktop that's ever taken off, right? Because we want clicky clacky under these and we want to feel them. Same thing. It takes getting used to. And that's what burns BlackBerry is that people... You know, people are going to spend like maybe a week with it and then return it because it feels weird, but it's better when you really live with it. So we've got this Business Wire press release, which I can kind of jump into right here. Onward Mobility announces agreements with BlackBerry and Foxconn subsidiary FIH Mobile to bring BlackBerry 5G smartphones to market. So here's why I'm a little bit nervous. Onward Mobility doesn't seem to be a real company. They're sort of a startup. And with this press release that they put out, they finally have a website. So this is Onward Mobility. Welcome to Onward Mobility. In a business world that relies more and more on critical data, you're only as good as the devices that transmit it. Onward Mobility, a U.S.-based company in the mobile security space, has joined forces with BlackBerry, a longtime leader in the design and manufacture of mobile devices, specifically for the transmission of business data and communication with a clear mission, to provide all businesses from government to enterprise to those who power the gig economy, the most productive, most user-friendly, and most secure mobile devices ever created, so nothing gets in the way of their mission. And then it says Onward Mobility will work closely with BlackBerry and FIH Mobile, a subsidiary of Foxconn Technology Group, to ensure world-class design and manufacturing of the devices. Here's the problem. This website looks fine. I mean, you know, it's got an about page. We move security forward. But how? We're going to do so without compromising on the usability, functionality, or productivity. But how? Like, what have you done? That here's some stock photography of people, businessy people. Here's a businessy person in a boardroom with MacBooks, I guess. No, that's not a MacBook. It's just a generic silver laptop. Here's a woman with a nose ring. So let's scroll back up. And then security. The future of business is secure. Is it? So some mission statements about this, but there's no solution that they can point to that Onward Mobility has ever worked on. Productivity and security go hand in hand. Okay. But what have you done in this space? You say that you are a player in the mobile productivity and mobile security space, but there's nothing we can point to that Onward Mobility has accomplished. If we go to our team, we have a shared passion for innovation. Mobile invincibility doesn't just happen. It takes unrivaled talent, foresight, and experience all working together towards a single goal. Okay? So here we finally get to the people that are a part of Onward Mobility. Peter Franklin is the CEO. 15 years of experience in reconstructing technology companies, including working on key initiatives with both Microsoft and Zynga. All right. The CSO, the Chief Strategy Officer, is Donovan Favre. Considering the last name, you might say leadership is in Donovan's blood. Because of Favre. Managing partner and founder of Accenture Procurement Solutions. He led nothing less than the world's largest global procurement outsourcing practice, which is important to know because they're going to be working with Foxconn. And then John Cascio, solid, steady, and with a unique talent for guiding for all things financial. Let me try and read that one more time. Solid, steady, and with a unique talent for guiding for all things financial for digital brands. John's vast experience is a most welcome asset at Onward Mobility. Previously the director of finance for HigherEducation.com, a Red Ventures portfolio company, and PwC, we look forward to taking advantage of his 15-plus years of experience. So before I caught this press release, the only thing you can really find, you could find from Onward Mobility before that website went live, was their Facebook page. And that was it. This was the public face of Onward Mobility the day before that press release went live and they published their Be Invincible website. So here's where I'm cranky and concerned. I desperately want another BlackBerry. I want more options in this space. I am so tired of talking about phones like they're only one thing that we all agreed upon. There's this one slab of glass sandwich. And I mean, it should be good enough for you to use any phone that's just the same as any other phone. And when you start playing with some of these really fun differences, dual screen, stylus support, camera and creator focused phones, hardware keyboards, you gain an appreciation for the niche communities of people that aren't represented by a popularity algorithm ad campaign, right? You know, like Samsung can just blast YouTube and can promote and can pay for ads and has a marketing budget that eclipses the GDP of small nation states. But that doesn't mean that they're really going to cover everyone. It doesn't really mean that everyone's needs are going to be satisfied. And even if you have a smaller player in this space, what I loved about the TCL partnership with BlackBerry, this was a niche device. There is someone out there who values quick communication access beyond everything else on their phone. They're constantly messaging, they're constantly IMing, they're constantly replying and texting and emailing. And that person, man, a hardware keyboard, that goes a long way. And then the other things that kind of fill in, you know, like I'd rather see my doctor walk in with one of these. To my knowledge, yet, I don't believe any bounty on a security exploit for a BlackBerry has ever been claimed. Like from the original Priv, and we're talking Android, not like old school BlackBerry devices or BlackBerry OS devices, but on Android, I don't believe any root or exploit has ever been claimed on a Priv, on a DTEC, or on a Key 1 or Key 2. But when I look at stuff like this, it makes me really anxious. It makes me really nervous. A startup company is acting as a middleman to facilitate a relationship between BlackBerry and Foxconn. It's going to be a Foxconn-made gadget. Because it doesn't look like this company has any of the internal talent to make a phone. TCL makes pretty good hardware. This hardware is really nice. It's just working within the constraints of BlackBerry licensing. So your costs go up when you have to pay BlackBerry for all of their IP. But the hardware is great. I mean, definitely better than the Key 1. Onward Mobility doesn't seem to have any internal stuff. Like they don't seem to be a real company. I'm very anxious. At least like when the Nokia brand was revived for phones, the company HMD that is licensing the Nokia trademark and IP was at least made up of former Nokia executives. Yes, it's being built in Chinese manufacturing capacities. And yeah, there is a more complicated structure and arrangement on how that IP is used. But it still felt a little like Nokia. Like it felt like it was a little of that DNA was still intact. I mean, I'm not predicting this is going to fail. I'm predicting they're going to have a significant uphill challenge in trying to revive some consumer interest in a BlackBerry style device. But I'm very concerned that this is going to end up just being a slightly more cynical licensing agreement than the real DNA of what makes a BlackBerry device a compelling option for those people that are still into their BlackBerries. Yeah, it's, I want to be more excited. I want to be happier. I'm extremely anxious. And so again, why I feel like this is kind of a cynical play is because you'll see these types of headlines. The 5G BlackBerry could be the most American made phone out there. So this is coming by Chris Velasco over at Engadget. He breaks down some reasons on what they think. You know, TCL was a different type of, you know, ODM, and this is an upstart company out of Texas. But do we want that? See, this is what, again, we look at different devices. Chinese manufactured phones for a really long time had a very similar feel in being kind of iPhone clony, right? Your UI was sort of a very iPhone style, no app drawer kind of UI. I remember those endless Oppo phones that I used to play with at Pocket Now that all looked like iPhone 6s, right? You had a bigger Oppo that was an iPhone 6 and a smaller Oppo that was an iPhone 6. The Chinese flavor for that didn't really start changing until Huawei got more aggressive on some of the P series and Mate series phones. I would say into like the Nexus 6P era, where they got more insight directly from Google, their manufacturing started changing up. Like the Novas were really cool. The P series was really cool. The Mates started getting a lot more aggressive in terms of design. And they all started moving away very aggressively from just making another iPhone clone. LG and Samsung dictate a South Korean style that is now software focused on big bubbly panels. It wastes a ton of space on your screen. I do not like Samsung One UI, but I at least like that it's a cohesive visual language, and LG is kind of piggybacked on that. That seems to be the South Korean style of what a phone should resemble. BlackBerry's Canadian. BlackBerry's not American. I'm not looking for the most American BlackBerry I can get. I don't want a BlackBerry by way of Texas. I want the old crazy DNA of BlackBerry that gave us phones like the Priv and the Passport. I mean, I've got them over there on the shelf. I might have to go reach and grab them here because I'm getting all nostalgic for them. But, you know, keyboard, security, communication-focused devices that were really second to none. And then they were always about maximizing your data connectivity. So browsers on older classic BlackBerry phones were garbage, but those things sipped data and sipped battery life. So you had multi-day running phones that barely impacted your data rates on carriers when data was way more expensive into the 2G and 3G era of smartphones. And that's what I'd kind of like to see: efficiency, security, and a focus on productivity and communications. And I'm anxious because I don't see anything from Onward Mobility that shows that they've been able to execute those kinds of initiatives for a consumer-facing device. So we'll have to see. Matt Tyler saying it won't fail because of this company. It will fail because the world we live in don't care enough about the old guard, HTC, Nokia, Motorola, BlackBerry. I think some of that's kind of changing up, though. You know, HTC still needs to just get a phone out the door, and then tech reviewers will savage it for not being a Samsung. But Nokia has actually carved out an okay niche for low-budget devices. Their premium strategy is not in good shape, but their Android One strategy, I think, is doing well for a smaller licensing agreement of a revival of the Nokia brand. I'm not sure I understand what you say, Simon, but I think we'd all agree with the sentiment. I'm just going to read it verbatim what he typed. The 5G BlackBerry could the most not made American phone. And I think we'd all agree with that. Simon says Hypno not enjoying the Oppo Find 5 back in the day. Yeah, definitely. TK Bay, BlackBerry by Texas Instruments. Oh man. TI, we're still in the mobile electronics game for more than graphing calculators. Oh, Matt Tyler, this could be kind of interesting. What if LG offered a dual screen case and a keyboard one of the same design? I'm not sure how that would work, though, because the hinge, how you would hold the phone, I don't think that would be conducive to typing. So like here on my V60, this would have to be the keyboard part, and then it would be the lightest, thinnest part, which is on the hinge. So you'd maybe want to build, like what you could do is build an LG case where it was a slider. So like, you would have, unfortunately, you would probably still have a bit more of an asymmetrical bezel, but then a keyboard could slide out from under. But that's going to make a chunky phone, having any type of moving hinge or slider, and then adding actual physical tactile keys. I would think it was cool. I don't think it would move the needle on LG's modular strategy. I think a lot of people would probably not like it. But bringing up another company, because Matt was saying, you know, oh, the old guard and Motorola. I wanted to read this off last week, and we kind of ran out of time. And my show's already run a little bit long, so I want to cover it this week. Trevor Reese on the Patreon wrote up a wonderful look at the Moto G Power. So I want to kind of skim through some of this. I might not read the whole thing. Let me get this out of the way here. Trevor Reese, color me impressed, Moto. The Moto G Power is a pretty darn good phone for $250. Been trying to find a phone that I can give to my father-in-law to replace the Honor 6X that he's been using for the last 3.5 years. But $400 for a Pixel 3a was too expensive. His current one was fine, but he never gets phone calls in the house and there's no Wi-Fi calling. sorry, I just love... Oh, I gotta click out of this. I always love those kinds of, like, backhanded, it's not a compliment. What am I trying to say? where it's like you kind of shrug it off, you know, like, well, I mean, it's working fine, except for the fact that he can't get phone calls. But I mean, it's fine, but it's not fine. get this back. Let me say this thing is impressive. The occasional hitch up here and there when updating apps, but otherwise it's handling all my regular use just fine. And 14 hours into the day, I've still got 36% battery left. That's a normal day's use, an hour of Android Auto navigation, 6 hours of podcast streaming over Bluetooth, an hour and a half of Reddit and web browsing, and an hour and a half of music streaming over the phone's loudspeaker, and a constant smartwatch connection. Shout out to the Rebel. Good looking out for the Rebel. And that brings me to the most standout feature of this phone, the loudspeaker. First, I didn't realize it had stereo speakers using the earpiece and the bottom firing speaker. And if you forced me to guess, I would say that the earpiece speaker is the same speaker that is in the bottom firing speaker because they sound almost identical and they're loud. Crisp with a decent amount of bass. I think tomorrow I'll pull out my G7 and put boombox mode to the test against this thing. I think the Moto might have it beat. The screen is nice, 1080p, very clear. Units display is very cool, and there's nothing I can do to change the color temperature. I've settled on leaving night light mode on full time at about 75% intensity, and that seems to put the color about where it should be. It's also an older, wider aspect ratio, which will be nice for my father-in-law, who has the font turned up to readable from the moon. It does have a headphone jack, seems pretty decent. I don't have any scientific tests or high impedance headphones to test, but in an AB with my LG G8, it held up pretty well. I disabled all of its special Dolby modes just because they destroy the audio. The only one of them that sounds decent is the brilliant treble mode. The rest just crush all the sparkle and vocals and muddy up everything. Then there's the little things like the rear-mounted fingerprint sensor, which is an 8 out of 10 fingerprint sensor that does have swipe gestures for the notification screen. Vibration motor is as good as a non-linear actuator can be. It doesn't pop, but it's pretty tight and good enough for me to leave the vibration on for the keyboard. Side buttons are crispy. Power button is nicely ridged. The buttons are a little high up on the one side of an already large phone, but it's nothing a little time won't allow one to get used to. And this is my first time actually getting to play with the Moto suite of gestures, and they are really great. The chop chop works every time. The twist for camera seems a bit reckless, but works consistently. I like that note. It seems a bit reckless, but it works. Although on this chipset, it does take a tick for the app to be ready to shoot, but it's acceptable at the price. And the three-finger hold for screenshot is great. And OMG, an editor that lets you mark up the screenshot. Thank God. Haven't done a camera analysis, but I have taken a few utility shots. They look fine. I don't expect it to be great, but it, what did he say? I don't expect it to be great, but don't expect it to be as strong as the Honor 6X was at the time. That thing was competitive with flagships of its day. Bought the unlocked version off Amazon, using it on T-Mobile. It's been comparable to my LG G8 for reception. I would definitely recommend this for general users. It's not stiff competition for the Pixel A series, but if the best camera isn't a big deal, it will do everything else pretty much just as well, and it's at least a Benjamin cheaper. So those are the kinds of stories that we start to lose out on, you know, like the Motos came out this year. It was the Moto G Power, Moto G Stylus. Was that the two? I mean, there was the Moto Edge. That was a Verizon exclusive. But we start to miss out on fitting the right product to the right consumer. You know, I'm talking about iPhone SEs and Pixel 4As and TCL, you know, like a TCL 10 Pro, as being reasonably priced budget fare. And that's something I definitely need to take a step back and reevaluate, because even in this economy, someone looking to front $400 on a phone, that might be a stretch. That might be too rich for someone needing to cover their communication basics. So, I mean, like, I wrote that article doing the showdown between the Stylo 6 and the TCL 10L. And I've got a write-up coming. I'm not going to do a video on it just because my YouTube strategy is just in a mess right now. But I'm going to do a full write-up review on the TCL 10L after having used it and kind of mixing it back and forth between the Velvet and the Pixel 4A. I mean, like, what we're doing in the sub-$300 category is pretty remarkable. And I have it within arm's reach right now because I was wrapping up that other piece. But, you know, not to buy full MSRP, but a Stylo 6 on sale, getting close to like $150. So yeah, this is not a fun experience if you compare it to a $900 plus premium flagship crown jewel phone, but you can get it for 1/10 the price of a premium iPhone or a premium Galaxy. If you shop this on sale, it is less expensive than replacing the screen on an iPhone or a Galaxy, and you'd still have cash left over for accessories. So, yeah. So I really wanted to send a shout out to Trevor. This was such a great write-up, and I really appreciated him sharing some thoughts and kind of digging in a little bit more than just, I bought a cheap phone and I could use it to open Instagram and the camera's not good enough. You should just buy a better phone. $250. $250, and Moto's showing that they still have the chops to make a competitive... I mean, are we calling... Is that where we're at? Are we calling $250 to $300 entry-level fare? I mean, that kind of hurts my brain a little bit. Back when we had phones like the Honor 8 and the Axon 7, $400 seemed like such a good deal, but those phones were going up against $650 or $700 premium phones. So they weren't quite half price. They were about 2/3 the cost of a premium flagship from Samsung or Apple. $250. That looks like our new entry level now, which is kind of crazy in my brain. Like, that somehow doesn't work. Like, I should still be calling that mid-range, but it's not. And we're about to have phones breaking $2,000 if we've got folding screens and 5G support. So this conversation is getting really precious. Like, what are you going to do with your cash? There are people out there who really can't do $30 or $40 or $50 a month, but they still need a phone. Like, they still need to be able to communicate with people. So more of these conversations are going to be necessary over the next year. Yeah. DTNL is saying $250 is unfortunately entry level these days. Sentinel909, most folks in my surroundings will not pay more than €250 for a phone. They will either buy a cheap Android, old flagship, or an old iPhone. And I mean, like, man, stepping up to a Pixel 4a, again, we're saying $350. Well, I'd say that's €300, somewhere in there. Although with Google, it's probably a €350 phone. I'm fighting people who actually can afford to spend more and trying to get them to not. Like, I've got some family members like, I seriously doubt you're going to have 5G support in the next 2 years. You do very basic things on your phone. Don't buy the Note. Don't do it. Like, again, those family members I've got who have purchased Notes and iPhone Pros and then never used anything on those phones, which justifies the higher price tags. Matt Tyler, in the UK, you cannot buy an LG Stylo at all. Not abroad, not from eBay, literally nowhere, no idea why. V60 Velvet and so on you can source, but the Stylo 6, for some reason, it's banned. I bet you it's another regional weird thing. Like, you might be able to get a K-Series through an EU distributor, but they don't have the same licensing or distribution agreement for a Stylo. Again, LG, they are in a recovery mode. They are trying to rebuild their phone manufacturing team in a very aggressive, cost-conscious kind of way. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do next year. And a DTNL, a Pixel 4a is a solid mid-ranger with borderline flagship level performance and software support. If you catch my buy the benchmarks, you'll see how that Pixel 4a is competing very well against phones that are quite a bit more expensive. Dave Burns, but I like to make poor financial decisions. Simon says, Hypno, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink water if it prefers champagne. Yeah, but they're not even getting the champagne. It's like they're buying the champagne bottle and then, like, sniffing the cork. I don't have a good metaphor to follow that up. It's like you know, they're displaying the champagne, but they're not really drinking the champagne. It's weird. Sentinel 909. I have no doubt that the 4A will be around 400, maybe 450 euro. Again, regional and distribution costs never make sense in my brain. From Jim, 72165, my actual budget says I should be buying $150 phones, but I save up so I can buy better phones because they are a priority for me. Again, I mean, like, that is a strategy I think is so much more responsible. You own the phone, you can flip the phone, sell the phone, you don't have to deal with the carrier's zero interest loan. I mean, that's the more responsible way of going about this. People trick themselves into thinking their $1,300 phone is only really 50 bucks a month. That's not the deal. You're paying full retail, and you're paying full retail on a phone that won't be worth that much by the time you're done paying it off. DTNL, I like throwing away my hard-earned money recklessly. I usually burn fat wads of cash in the winter, but in summer I usually resort to dousing my cash in iced tea and throwing away those sticky wads of cash. I think we've sort of lost the plot. We're about done with this podcast, right, guys? Yeah, I think we are. So, folks, yeah, some really fun topics to dig into. The Epic Apple App Store antitrust story is one that I think is probably going to keep popping up over the next couple of weeks. It's just such a dramatic battle between two companies that I don't even really care about the two companies. You know, Apple is now officially, what, a $2 trillion market cap company, and Epic is backed by some major funding and makes a game that I don't play. But it's more about watching how all this precedent's going to go down. It's going to have some interesting impacts on the legal system and our regulatory power over things like consumer electronics and software services. But all of this, you know, it's been crazy watching 2020 start to try and recover. A ZTE, an Asus, a new LG mid-ranger, looking at motos that are quietly sneaking around in the background. And there's still talk that maybe HTC might get a phone out the door this year. We'll have to see. But it's nice to see some other flavors of conversation and competition. There's an opportunity here. You know, an iPhone 12 is going to be a fine phone. A Note 20, I'm sure it's a fine phone. But those can't be the only conversations we're going to have wrapping up the second half of 2020. There's so much more to talk about and so many other things that we can compare and test and run for performance and see like what it might do to benefit a work from home or a homeschool strategy. So Gary the Fireman, coming soon to the Supreme Court, Apple versus Epic. Actually, there was it Apple versus, was it Pepper? I can't remember. There was a case that made it up to the Supreme Court where the plaintiff's issues with the Apple App Store were validated, but then the Supreme Court didn't hear that case, but they kicked it back down to the lower court for review. So again, we're seeing our legal system start to grok tech, which could be good. I don't know. We'll have to see. Anyway, so folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This was an amazing live chat. I can't thank you enough. Again, this is how I love to start off my week. There's going to be a ton of stuff coming out to the channel. I've got a lot of little Pixel 4 videos, so be on the lookout for some more expanded coverage on that. I've got the script written for my Nook. Hopefully I can get that out the door. I still have to shoot. I'm not going to get a camera review out this week, but next up should be the Velvet, and I'm hoping to have the Pixel 4a audio review out for the Patreon as one of the Patreon perks. Lots of stuff, really cool stuff. And somewhere in this, I think this Friday, we're going to do another Patreon live stream because I didn't do one last month. So I should really do one to wrap up August as we're getting to closing this month out. Time is just flying by. So Crashbox 1236 has the right idea. Go get your breakfast quesadilla and coffee. I'm totally going to go do that. Thank you so much, everybody. Really enjoy this conversation. Really enjoy the participation. Those of you out there sharing, not just my video content, I absolutely adore all of the support, people, trying to spread the word on my videos, but then also contributing to the community over at Glowing Rectangles. It's just so exciting watching that grow and watching that blossom. So I want you all to have a fantastic week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. Stuff is still crazy out there. And I want to see names back here next week. And I'll catch you all on another episode. So stay safe. Love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.